In addition to being weird, Portland is becoming known in the tech industry as a city that fosters innovation. Many people working in the industry believe that new technology can solve problems, including social and environmental problems. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Disruptive Technologies and Human Design, part 4 of Startup City, how the new tech boom is changing Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor My Name is Rachel Corrie, a play based on the diaries and letters of an activist killed in 2003 when she was acting as a human shield between an Israeli bulldozer and a Palestinian home. My Name is Rachel Corrie shows on Sunday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in Portland. There will be a discussion following the play with Cindy and Craig Corrie, the actress and the producer. Again, that's My Name is Rachel Corrie, Sunday, November 9th, 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, it's 9:01. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Political Perspectives. Today, Joanne Hardesty and Lisa Loving host The Day After. They have their guest, Blair Beaubier. They'll be reviewing the election results, and they'll be taking your calls on the winners and losers in the 2014 election. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock on the KBOO Bike Show, they'll bring you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. And once again, thank you, KBOO members, for your support for community radio. That's your community radio. If you missed our recent membership drive, you can still become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking right where it says Donate Today. And now we're going to get to The Day After.
It's 9:03 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Day After 2014 election recap. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm joined by Joanne Hardesty this morning.
It's a pleasure to be here, Lisa.
You too. And we're also live in the studio with Blair Beaubier from the Pacific Green Party. Blair.
Good morning, Lisa.
And later, actually very soon, we're going to be joined with the amazing, joined by the amazing Greg Pallast in a cab in some urban area somewhere
yes,
in America.
Yes.
So we have a lot to talk about this morning. The local returns are amazing. Everybody's got their eyes riveted to the GMO race, which still looks
which
like it's neck and neck.
Yes.
But we thought we would start out with some national returns.
Right.
Who wants to start? Does anybody around the table want to start with that?
Well, of course, as you know, the U.S. Senate is now going to be controlled in January by the Republican Party. They picked up 7 seats, which now gives President Obama a Republican-controlled House, a Republican-controlled Senate. And if we thought they couldn't get anything done with a Democratic-controlled Senate and Republican-controlled House, I think we're in for a scary 2 years.
It certainly looks that way, and I think that Obama may have to think of other ways to get things done. He can use executive orders, he can do things with his agencies, but he's going to have a hard time doing anything with Congress. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the Democrats don't usually get his back. I think that's one of the problems. Even when the Democrats have a majority in the national legislature and Congress, they don't get things done. So the Republicans tend to be much more activist-oriented, and the Democrats don't even play defense.
Well, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it was frustrating leading up to this national election, just realizing how many Democrats didn't want the president campaigning with them, didn't really want them, you know, close to their state because of the approval ratings of the president has been down quite a bit. Do we have Greg Palast about to join us?
I believe we've got Greg. Greg, how's it going?
How's it going? It's great. I escaped from North Carolina before they sealed the borders and made me renounce Obamacare.
So you got out just in time.
Just in time, the last plane out.
I don't know if you are aware, Greg, but we were just talking about this massive change in the U.S. Congress with the Republicans picking up 7 seats in the U.S. Senate and picking up, I believe, an additional 6 or 7 seats in the House.
Right. Well, of course, I don't know how much change because we can't point to anything major happening since the Republicans took the House. It's been a deadlock, and it will continue to be so. What I'm concerned with is what I saw in Dixie, which was the return of Jim Crow tactics,
right,
to scare away but mostly to remove black voters and minority voters to the voter roll. The first attack I've seen yet to disenfranchise Asian Americans.
I'm sorry, did you say Haitian Americans?
Asian
Americans.
Asian Americans.
Uh-huh.
So, right. If I had reported, I did a long 6-month investigation for Al Jazeera America, which you can see at aljazeeraamerica.com, called double voting the return of Jim Crow. And if you go to that article, you'll see what I uncovered is the operation of a scheme called Interstate Cross Check, in which you had 27 states, 22, 23 of them Republican-controlled elections board, which were using this system. Oregon was using it and got out, as far as I could tell. And what
Washington
it is,
State.
It, Oregon jumped, got out of it,
right,
but left. There are some states like Washington, Oregon, Florida had joined in, then left it. And here's why. It's a system that's supposed to locate people who vote twice. People who vote, say, in Oregon and Texas, Texas not in it, but like Alabama and Alaska. So we find names like Johnson, William, for example. Here's a case. William Malachi Johnson of Virginia is supposed to be the same as William Lewis Johnson of North Carolina. Now, they say that person, William Johnson, and I know that Bill Johnson is a very unusual name, but believe it or not, they're saying that two Bill Johnson in two different states are the same exact voter, though they have a different middle name. And they've accused 7 million voters of being actually just 3.5 million voters. They're voting twice, the same person. And the way that they choose the way that they match people to see if you've committed what is a felony crime, you go to a federal penitentiary for 5 years if you get caught, that millions of people are committing this crime en masse of voting in two states at once. But no one had seen the list. No journalist, no member of the public had actually seen who these criminals are until I finally, with our team, was able to get a hold of 2 million of the names.
Greg, I want to ask you a question. Can I just jump in? Yeah. When you say they have decided and they this, who's controlling these lists? Who's behind it?
There's a very specific they. It's a him named Chris Kobach, who got reelected last night. Hey, when you count the votes, he's Secretary of State of Kansas.
He's
Catherine
State.
Harris of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And Kobach has been on this voter fraud crusade. And they are the, in almost all cases, with few exceptions, Republican elections directors.
So Secretary of States, right? And most
Secretaries of State that sometimes run the Republican Party's election projects.
Right. Right.
That's
and, yeah. So what's happened is that they are states are joining up. They send their voter list to Kansas to Mr. Kobach, and he matches. He does what he claims in his. In his sales pitch and his advertising, his public display, matching, hunting for these people, breaking the law, voting twice. He says he checks their social security number, their middle name, junior, senior, you know, their address history, et cetera. Seems very, very sophisticated. But when we got the list, it's not sophisticated at all. It's literally the only match that puts you on a list is your first name and your last name. It even says in the instructions, if you read, go to aljazeera.com for the Greg Palast article, we even show you the instructions that we got a hold of, which says there may be social security numbers, there are very few, but if they don't match, you're still on the list.
Right.
If your middle name doesn't match, you're still on the list. And let me tell you, there are nearly, out of the 7 million names, nearly 2 million don't match middle name.
Greg, I've got a question for you. This is Blair Bobier, and you uncovered similar things in Florida in 2000, and then we saw similar things in Ohio in 2004. This seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
And I feel like they're all tied to like individual, like for-profit products that people who are conservative are selling, like those voting machine things. And now what you're talking about, this matrix for the checking thing.
Oh,
somebody's making money on that.
There's no question.
Yes.
There's no question that you have private contractors. For people who know my work, who are familiar with Greg Palast stuff and my investigations, for BBC and The Guardian, I uncovered how Catherine Harris knocked off thousands of black folk off the voter rolls.
Right.
And this is eerily similar.
Yeah, eerily similar. And they knocked off black people saying that they were felons.
Right.
They were not allowed to vote.
Well, and they were pre-felons then, right?
Yeah, every case. By the way, very few people have asked me what happened to those lists. Every single person on that list, no exception, was a voter whose only crime was voting while black. No illegal voters, not one on a list of 58,000. They knew it, and that's how they did it. So as soon as I heard about this cross-check list, I said, smells like something I've seen before. And sure enough, it took months to get these lists. They've gotten better at it. See, in the old days, they didn't know what I was looking for, so Catherine Harris handed me her computer disks. In this case, they said, no. If we're looking for double voters, since you go to jail, Mr. Palast, if you get caught voting in two different states, this is a criminal investigation, and therefore, there's no open record. It's all confidential.
Greg, in Florida, this was hurting the Democrats. Are these efforts at suppression also hurting the Democrats? And if it is, why are they doing anything about it?
Well, two things. There's really two questions. Does it hurt Democrats? Yes, because you have to look at who has common names.
Right.
Who is named David Lee? Who is named Jose Rodriguez? Who is named Alan Washington? We know who they are because the United States Census, you'll be interested to know, keeps a list of almost every surname in America and can give you the racial breakdown for almost every name. For about 6 million last names, we can get the racial breakdown from the Census Bureau. So when we look at those last names, we know the person's race.
It's amazing.
So, for example, we have 80-some percent of the people with the last name Washington are African-American. 84, 86% of people named Rodriguez are Hispanic. I'm actually interested in who the 16% of Rodriguez's are who aren't Hispanic, but okay.
Right. They're probably married to a Hispanic person, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, that's exactly correct. And so I actually, so I went to, and are they Democrats? Well, so what happens is that you're using no match except first and last name. You're just going to get a list of common
people.
Names.
Right.
You're going to get David Lee. You're going to get thousands of them. And, you know, I'm looking right now at a cross-check list. Well, here's typical. I have a whole bunch of Browns. Andrew Tremaine Brown of Georgia, who supposedly voted a second time as Andrew Mark Brown in Virginia. Then a Brittany Nicole Brown voted in Georgia, and she's supposed to be the same voter as Brittany Rachel Brown in Woodbridge.
So, Greg, let me ask how this works. So the last person that you just described, so does that mean that cross-check would drop them off of the voting rolls in both states?
Well, here's the trick. They get very fancy with this one. They know if they dump 7 million people off the voter rolls in one shot,
right,
that would be visible.
Right.
Then you wouldn't need a Greg Palast to uncover it.
Right.
You know? I'm a former detective, so I know how to do this stuff. Then they would be in people's face. No, they're much more subtle than that. What they're doing is they're sending postcards to people saying, verify your registration, sign here with your name and address. Now, most people take these, you know, these little postcards with a bunch of junk that say official mail. You know, the halftime you get, 90% of the time you get official mail, it's just junk mail from
right. The
Koch brothers or Coca-Cola.
Right.
And so people throw it out. And also, a lot of people never get their mail because they were renters who've moved.
Right.
You don't lose your vote because you've moved within a congressional district if you're a renter. If you're a student, you're likely to move. So renters, students, people lose their homes, people lose their jobs. Well, who are those people? They're blue people, Democrats for the most part. Now, I'm often asked, why don't the Democrats scream about this? Well, this is true in Florida in 2000. In fact, I have to tell you, I spoke to the head of the Democratic Party in Florida at the time. He said he couldn't get a single one of his candidates to raise the issue of the disenfranchisement of black folk because they didn't want to be seen as supporting criminal black people. You know, they're not criminal. They're innocent voters.
But God. I mean, God, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So the Democrats, don't forget, in some states, like, for example, Illinois, which just had a squeaker race
yes.
in which they lost the governorship.
Right.
Illinois is joined this list. You say, well, how could a Democratic state, a mostly Democratic state where Obama comes from, join this list? The answer is all politics is local, and the Democratic machine, for the most part, does not want an overwhelmingly African-American or Hispanic vote. They just don't want it.
Really?
And, because all politics are local. And, you know, the machine has never been comfortable with the African-American vote. They, you know, remember...
But certainly in the aggregate, the Democratic Party is nothing without the African-American vote.
Look, well, I've talked to there's the only time it's ever... I talked to Terry McAuliffe when he was chairman of the Democratic Party. He was completely useless, as he is as a governor of Virginia now, which is in cross-check. As far as they're concerned, these are voters that are alien to the leadership of the Democratic Party. The only time I've ever seen any concern about it was when Howard Dean was president, as chairman of the Democratic Party. I ran into him. And he says, "I keep your book in my briefcase. best moxie money can buy." And I said, "That's great. I bet you tell it to every journalist. It's a great line." He says, "No, I do." And he opened his briefcase, and there was my book.
And there it was.
And, but he was concerned, but he said he simply cannot get these state parties to act on the disenfranchisement of low-income voters in particular. They're not, because so many of the state parties, the incumbents were elected without these votes.
Right.
Remember that the number one party is not Democrat or Republican, it's incumbency.
It's green. It's
green.
Money.
Hezbollah-Shekel, the party of the cash.
Yeah, so the other green, right.
Do not count on the Democratic Party to save your vote. You save your vote. If you go to Al Jazeera, and one way to do it, by the way, go to AlJazeeraAmerica.com and look for the Palace story. If that's confusing, just go to gregpalace.com and maybe put it up on the Hebrew site.
And I put it up on the Facebook, on my Voices from the Edge Facebook page last week, so it's also there.
So what you want to do is you want to go to the middle of that article. There is a box, and you put in your first name, and you put in your last name, and see if you have been caught in the cross-check dragnet. Mm-hmm. Now, we only put up a million names, but it's the same names over and over. And so we've like I said, we've only loaded in a million names from the cross-check list. But if your name is David Lee or Bill Johnson, something like that, you're on it.
Or John Williams,
and by the way,
right.
You know, I did go to the Republicans to ask them I was down in North Carolina. I asked the state government that the state government actually hired this hotshot ex-FBI agent to look for these double voters, because after all, it is a federal and state crime. You go to prison. Anyone who's ever been caught, a few people have been caught, not from this list, I want to tell you, but the few people who've been caught, maybe one a year.
Right.
In every single case, they've been sent to prison. No one gets out of prison with this one.
That's right.
So I said, you know, here's millions of people committing this mass crime. You should be able to find some. In North Carolina, they said that they announced that they had 190,000 suspects. 190,000 suspects in this crime. That's a heck of a conspiracy.
Yes, it is.
With 190 suspects.
90,000, right.
You have their names. You have their addresses.
Right.
You have on their sheets in North Carolina, they have their phone numbers. You know,
should
you
be
know
easy to
are.
Find.
You know where they vote.
Right.
You know where they vote because you got their address, right? And they show up at the polls. They say, so how many of you arrested? How many of you convicted of this terrible crime? None. How many arrested? None. How many have been referred for prosecution? None. I said, you got the names and addresses. You're kidding me. The answer is because no one's committed that crime. It's not names and addresses of 190,000 suspects. The only thing they're suspected of is voting blue. Minorities voting Democratic.
Right.
Minorities voting, or in the case of some Democrats participating, minorities voting in primaries in ways they do not approve.
So let me ask you, Greg, have you done any analysis since last night? And I know it's very soon after. How many of the states that use this cross-check list ended up flipping... ended up being successful for, say, the Republican Party?
Well, in fact, and we have my investigatrix extraordinaire, Miss Badpenny, who could stay up all night making such a list. And we're finding in the close states like Virginia, I was just reeling off some of those Virginia cross-check names. Virginia has proudly announced, it's the one state that's proudly announced that it's removed 41,000 people because of cross-check. Well, then the races there were determined by less than 41,000 votes. When we're looking at the size of the cross-check list, and we figure, by the way, not everyone's going to get removed. Maybe 10 or 15%, 20% of the people on the list will be removed, about a million voters. Most of them will be removed before 2016. It was very slow so far. In Georgia, I have, it had an effect. In North Carolina, I have zero doubt that that's how Kay Hagan lost her race. She was cross-checked out of the Senate. And we have no one talking about it. In Georgia, the state Democratic Party is headed by an African-American woman. She took my list, and she was screaming bloody murder over it.
Mm.
Because she was never even told this type of purge is going on. But the Democratic Party in Virginia, forget it. In North Carolina, no, they don't want to talk about disenfranchisement because it simply reminds people that there are African Americans and Asians and Hispanic people who vote Democratic, and they want to run away from the label of being the minority party. They do not protect the minority vote.
Hey, I got to jump in here and say you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Day After, 2014 Election Recap. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm here with Joanne Hardesty and Blair Beaubier of the Pacific Green Party. We're on the line with Greg Pallast, and Greg is talking about his deep investigative report into the new flavor of voter purging. I'm just going to say it like that. It keeps coming back around. I mean, Greg, this whole thing, it's sort of, this is the history of when...
of voting in the United States.
Well, I was going to say, when people were given, after enslavement was theoretically abolished and people were given the right to vote, I don't mean to be cynical about it, ever since then, poll tax, right down the line, there have been all these different ways of controlling who's allowed to vote. And of course, you know, when we talk about the new Jim Crow now, we're looking at how many people can't vote because they are incarcerated. What is the real reason to have... okay, I'll say criminal injustice system. I said it, okay? You know, what is the real purpose of that politically? And all these things do, like, have an impact. And so we're all here wishing that more young people would vote. Yeah. And we were chatting in the lobby about, you know, we were getting all cynical about, well, does this really affect what Congress does? Because what they do, they don't really help us anyway. And there was that discussion. And it's that kind of level of people not being sure that we're even allowed to touch the levers of power that makes young people and old people alike not want to vote. Yeah. I mean, I think that this was a really low voting rate. What was your take, Greg, even for a midterm?
Well, since I was in the battleground states of Georgia and North Carolina, there was a big turnout there. But they did everything to prevent it. For example, in North Carolina, as in Georgia, they stopped early voting on the Sunday before the normal election day.
Right.
Well, African Americans don't have jobs for the most part where you can take the day off to vote, especially in their precincts where it is an all-day process of waiting in line for hours.
Right.
And, African Americans go to church and then it's sold to the polls day and they go out and vote. And that was shut down in Georgia and North Carolina, basically the African American voting day. Same thing happened in Ohio. There weren't big races there. Shut down, you know, making it harder to vote. And I got to tell you, I went to one precinct yesterday that had early voting on Saturday. They wouldn't allow Sunday voting. 10,000 people voted.
Wow.
At the one precinct. 10,000 people. The line went out for half a mile.
Wow.
This is not Uganda.
This is Ohio all over again.
This is what we were talking about years ago, because the secretaries of state, the people who control how people vote in their local communities, like how many voting machines they have, has a complete impact on that. We saw specifically that the secretaries of state, I want to say in Florida and also Texas, literally controlled how many machines there were. And Greg, I don't know if you're familiar with this. I'm just going to describe it as a conservative investigative reporting outfit called Watchdog.org, and it comes out of a conservative think tank. Well, so the past 2 weeks, I've been laughing because I've been seeing their reports that the voting machines are flipping the votes to Democrats instead of Republicans. And I mean, I just had to laugh my head off. And I wrote back to the guy, well, who made those machines? I mean, that was the question we had years ago. But Greg, I mean, it does. It comes back to me again, like, when are the Democrats of all people, you know, not that it's necessarily their job to save the voting system. Or we would love it if the Greens, if we had an army of Greens, right, to do that too. But it's like, when do the Democrats stop and try to make it work? Because I feel like that lawsuit, was it in Ohio, the Ohio recount?
We filed the lawsuit in Ohio,
The Greens and the Libertarians filed the lawsuit for the recount. John Kerry himself didn't even participate. It was his campaign. I'm not yelling.
And remember that Greg Pallast has been at the forefront of this, like, ever since the early Bush days. Every election cycle, Greg has been on the air talking about the lines in communities of color and poor communities as compared to the white communities.
And talking about this as an employee of organizations that are not based in the United States.
That
is
correct.
Such as the BBC, such as Al Jazeera. Right. I mean, put pencil to paper on that, okay?
That's right. Well, the United States won't pay for this kind of reporting. So.
I've not seen that article about the cross-check in the New York Times. In fact, I just went there and actually did a search. They haven't covered that.
And so, Greg, we are going to have to move into local races in just a few minutes. But I'm really curious as to Based on your pre-election investigation and what you've seen during this election cycle, what is the next step for you in this investigative reporting?
I'm going to Argentina.
Can I come?
Well, you know, it's connected because the same guys who are fixing the election here, like Paul the Vulture Singer, who's now the most important opponent to the Republican Party, he's trying to unseat the president of Argentina. You have to understand, this is all about the money. That's why I wrote the book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. It's not the Republicans stealing elections. It's billionaires who are stealing the election.
That's right.
It's beyond party.
Right.
Vote theft is class war by other means. And so I'm going to be tracking, following the money and the attempt to steal elections, not just in the United States, but, you know, in all over this planet. These guys are using these same tactics to undermine and blow up democracy everywhere. And I'm going to, and if they think I'm not going to follow them to the Congo, if you think they think I'm not going to follow to Argentina, they're wrong. I'm going where they're putting their money to fix elections everywhere.
Well, Greg, we're going to have you back on when you get that information, because clearly, I mean, people are already talking about the theft of the 2016 election.
Yeah.
So
thank
you so much for what you do. Thank you so much for your willingness to share your knowledge and wisdom with the KBOO listening audience. And you are just one of my heroes. You're out there. You don't mind mixing it up with the bad guys and letting us know what's going on.
With a really cool hat.
Well,
thank you. And I want to say that the supporters and members of KBOO are my heroes, because they're creating the one place where I can take my reports, which are front page all over the world, except in my home country.
Right.
And so the only way you're going to get the Greg Palast reports is if you have your radio station. Please keep this precious thing alive. No one asked me to make a pitch today, but I am.
Well, right. Thank you so much, Greg. You have a fabulous day.
Hey, and so this is KBOO Portland. This is The Day After, 2014 yes. election recap. I'm Lisa Loving. We're here with Joanne Hardesty and Blair Beaubier. And we just got off the line with Greg Palast, and he's saying, you know, the big issue is the corporate influence. And I have to say, for the Oregon state elections, that was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate influence, that how much money was dumped in this state.
Yes.
I can't even count that high.
Well,
going back to the GMO, I mean, really.
Before we leave the national stage, let's just make sure that our listeners know that at the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate, we now have 44 Democrats and 52 Republicans. And in the U.S. House, we now have 177 Democrats and 243 Republicans. And so clearly, a Republican agenda will be moving through the Congress, the next congressional session. And the answer will be, what can we expect and what can we stop, right? Because the only power that Obama will have will be the veto pen.
Now, I want to point out a couple of things when we look at the national picture, because you're absolutely right the way the numbers are reported. But here's a couple of things to consider. The Senate is incredibly anti-democratic, right? So you've got two senators from California representing 38 million people, probably the most diverse population in this country. And you have two senators also representing Wyoming.
Mm.
So the Republican states, Wyoming, the other low population states, Montana, are far overrepresented.
Where
California is underrepresented. Here's another interesting tidbit. The last election, 2014, when the Republicans had their majority in the House, if you tallied all the votes up, separate congressional district, the Democrats got more votes than the Republicans, but the Republicans won the House. And that's a failing of our electoral system. It's a failing of the way that the districts are drawn, and it's really a failing of the winner-take-all system. So the Democrats should have won the House if we just went by the aggregate number of votes the last time around. And that's not the only time it happened. So when we talk about voting in our country, we have to remember that our institutions are basically undemocratic. The Senate, by its very design, is undemocratic, and the House, the way it's elected, is undemocratic.
It's a beautiful day, though. I don't know. After a while, it's easy to get cynical. It's easy not to want to engage, you know?
Yes, it is absolutely true. It is definitely easy to be cynical. But as we spoke before we came on the air, Oregon Students Association registered 60,000 new voters before this election. So so clearly there were enough young people who were newly registered that may have had a difference. And of course, we don't have the analysis yet about
who voted
and who didn't vote, and whether or not this was a traditionally low turnout election, as is normal for midterm elections. But what I can say is when you add that many young people into the voting pool, good things happen. I don't know what that means for Measure 88 and why Measure 88 failed so miserably, which was
the immigration reform piece.
I think that was probably one of the most misunderstood measures on our ballot, because I think there was a perception that somehow we were giving rights to people who were not entitled to rights, that we were somehow doing something special for a group of folks.
And they were going to be able to take that card and get on an airplane. That became an issue. I'm like, what are you talking about?
And actually,
they
would not have been able to use that card for an airplane.
People from Mexico are terrorists. I mean, the whole analysis was weird, and it just spun out into space. But Blair, can you talk about that a little bit? So Blair is a public defender in Benton County, and you deal with some of these issues.
Well, it's a real problem because people who are working in this country, who are quite literally the backbone of the agricultural economy, and in Yamhill County, those are the folks picking the grapes that make all the fancy Pinot Noir that Oregon is known around the world for. But when
these
people...
That was a little like a wine on bourbon.
When these people are driving home, and if certain Oregon state troopers or local police suspect that someone's essentially driving while Mexican, they can pull them over. And if these folks do not have a driver's license, it is a misdemeanor crime for which someone can be thrown in jail. Now, until the policy was recently changed, those people could be in jail and then immigration could get a hold of them. And that could be a one-way ticket out of the country, leaving behind someone's family.
I just want to say this. I don't mean to be greedy, grasping, and narcissistic, but we are paying for that. If you're saying that this is the most important thing in the world, it's so much more important than the education system, for example, or healthcare, that we have to get these aliens out of the country. We being aliens, whatever, man. You know, that's the part that gets me, is that when I hear conservatives talk about this, they're so fiscally responsible, but they don't get into that whole issue of, like, when we stick someone in jail, we're paying for some of these people, we pay as much for them to be incarcerated for a year as it would cost to go to college. Now, what do you want to be doing with your money? Like, how do you invest it? Okay. But
And maybe that should have been the argument this time around. I mean, and maybe next time that's a good way for proponents to phrase it.
Well, but let's be honest. I mean, the measure itself was an inadequate measure. We had a democratically controlled legislative body that came up with a very weak piece of legislation. I mean, the reality is they should have made the case for why anyone in the state of Oregon should have a driver's license, right? We want people registered. We want people to have insurance. And rather than do that, they came up with this very weak half measure that actually didn't really satisfy most anybody. Right. And so we put all this energy into trying to pass a weak measure that wasn't something anybody wanted anyway. What people really want is the ability to drive legally in the state of Oregon. And because we had weak legislative leadership.
Because this was referred to the ballot by the legislature.
Actually, it wasn't referred by the legislature. The legislature actually passed this measure, and then a conservative anti-immigration group pressed it to the voters.
Yep,
right.
That's right.
We had good political leadership, they would have just said driver's license is something that we want everyone in the state of Oregon to have because we want to ensure everyone has auto insurance.
And that everyone knows how to drive and does it safely.
Right, that everyone follows the same rules of the vote, right? But because our legislators were unwilling to actually just address the racism that was all over this measure, because they refused to address the racism that was at the heart of eliminating the driver's license opportunity, we ended up with this half measure. And Oregonians are not really, you know, they want a reason to vote yes for something, right? And I think that this half measure actually wasn't sufficient enough for Oregonians to really understand what was at stake.
But we also passed the ERA, and that one cracked me up. So, I mean, again, I'm waking up this right. morning going, so we're a racist feminist state. What is that about?
Well, I mean, it was easy to pass the ERA because when I asked the people who put it on the ballot, well, and what is that going to do? Because women still don't have equal pay to men in the state of Oregon. That was a feel-good measure. You could put that in the Constitution and do absolutely nothing to equalize salary for men and women.
Actually, there was an interesting aspect of that I wouldn't have known, except I had to write about it. And there were four former Oregon Supreme Court justices who came out and wrote an open letter about why it was important. And right. their point was, you're laying the groundwork for law. That was their point. So in the future, if someone had, maybe the $15 measure can leverage that in some way, I'm not sure. But that was their point. And that's interesting. I don't even know how to look into those machines like that. I don't have a flashlight big enough.
Well, it's interesting to say that you're laying the groundwork. Well, didn't we agree a long time ago that everyone should be paid the same for equal work? Right? If you and I are doing the same job, shouldn't we get the exact same pay? Haven't we agreed as a society that's so?
I think we've agreed on a lot of things that haven't quite made its way into reality yet. I think we also think that war is a pretty bad idea.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, we definitely do. But that hasn't stopped our government from spending most of our resources on war.
Speaking of money, we were talking about the big money thing.
Yes.
And I know we're coming up on the last third of this hour. And I wanted to give a little bit of credit where I think credit is due. The Willamette Week did an article about rich white men all through the campaign finance landscape in Oregon's 2014 campaign.
Yes.
And they listed, and some of these people are progressive, some are conservative, but they listed the amounts of money that people contributed. I just wanted to throw that out there. John Arnold, who supported Top Two, he put out $1.75 million. He's from Houston, right?
I wish I knew him.
I don't think you want to.
He was one of the Enron profiteers.
Can
that
we just go back to Enron someday and talk
million
about
dollars right before Enron went bankrupt and everyone's pensions went down the toilet.
Whoa. I think we really need to revisit that story.
So we're really glad to have him throwing his soiled money around our state.
Throwing his soiled money. Michael Bloomberg, who supported Measure 90, the top two, he dropped $1.65 million,
wow.
right? So now we're up to, what is that, more than $3 million just for that one top two.
It was approximately $4.68 million from those two guys.
Okay,
yeah,
there
from
you
those
go.
Those two guys.
George Soros, he gave $1.39 million to Measure 91 to legalize cannabis. The Dr. Bronner's guy, David Bronner, the son, he gave $1.25 million to support GMO labeling. You know, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, one of the big things about them as far as GMO is that they create a product that requires hemp seeds, right?
Oh, yes.
So with that campaign, I mean, with what, you know, this is a major company. So when you look at even just the basic market forces that should be theoretically, if this were a capitalist society, it's not, that would be having an impact on this, that fascinates me. So he's a progressive, $1.25 million. Joseph Mercola supported Measure 92. He gave more than $1 million. He also opposed fluoridation. Let's not talk about that right now, okay? And I don't know if I've ever seen, there are no legal limits to the amount of money that outside institutions, organizations,
well, nowadays,
or individuals
right. not
can
with the
give,
Supreme Court, right.
yeah, can give to Oregon campaigns.
That's right.
And that's why we've always seen people from outside, especially Washington, D.C., dumping money into the state. And I actually interviewed Grover Norquist for KBOO about 10 years ago. And he thought, he thinks Oregon is the greatest thing since crushed pineapple because these organizations see it as a laboratory of their conservative ideas. And there mm-hmm. are a couple other places like that. But man, and so when you look at how close is the GMO labeling, I'm going to try to pull that up. It's like, what would have happened if, what would happen with the GMO labeling if like 37,000 squadjillion billion bucks hadn't been dropped in the state? So
right.
what AP has updated at 8:30 this morning is 49% yes, label the food, 51% no.
Ooh.
And they're saying almost 89% of votes counted. That's a squeaker, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And clearly would have gone the other way. I don't think there's any question that that would have won but for the ton
outside
money mm-hmm. from out of state.
Monsanto.
Right.
Yeah, they did that in Washington State and California, too. They crushed GMO labeling like a bug. Mm-hmm. Like a bug.
Well, so
see what I did there? Just kidding. It's always a sustainability thing. It was a sustainability thing. If there's a bug on it, you know it's good. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And one interesting thing when you talk about outside money, in Washington State, they had two anti-gun measures on the ballot.
My.
They had one measure that would require additional restrictions on purchasing firearms at a gun show, which passed. And the pro-gun people tried to put less restrictions on the ballot, and that failed. And so at least in Washington State, they have been able to actually pass legislation to control the sale of handguns in that state. And I think that's huge, especially with all the outside money from the NRA and others that try to go just the opposite way and make the laws less stringent.
True, and I wonder if anything like that would get traction in Oregon, or if our electorate is totally different from Washington in that respect.
Oh, so you know, one of the interesting things was the loss of Betsy Johnson, right, in Oregon, who was a Oregon state senator, who has been. Did she lose or did she?
No, she won.
She won.
She won. She kept her seat.
She kept her seat. But what happened is they expanded
the Democrats expanded their majority.
Their majority, right. Because she was actually targeted, Gelser
down in the Mid-Valley.
Yeah. Was I thought that she actually had taken her out, but she did not.
Oh, no. Sarah Gelser was in a different race. She was running against Betsy Close.
She was running in the
Close.
Senate. She was moving out of her. I think she had been a rep before.
Right.
She was. And she actually got a bunch of out-of-state money. Folks haven't necessarily looked at the other side of the equation, where there have been Democrats who have gotten big funding. And this was from someone who was interested in climate change. I think this was another billionaire out of California.
I remember that. Well, I mean, I think that what the midterms have shown us is this is just a drop in a bucket as compared to what's going to happen in preparation for the 2016 election cycle. For an off-year election, with the amount of money that was spent in these races and the kind of political manipulation that has taken place with purging voter rolls around the country, what we can expect is a supersized version of this for 2016.
You know what I was going to say? I'm checking out the Seattle Times on the gun control measures. Mm-hmm. And what's really remarkable, I mean, I think that one of the differences, the big differences between Oregon and Washington, is that a lot of the best and brightest people in the history of, you know, expansion in this country came to Oregon, looked around and said, sunset laws, bye. And they went north
and
to Washington.
To Washington, right?
Kind of a lot of people do that for
whole
array of reasons. So you have more millionaires up there. You've got you have more Fortune 500 companies. There's more money. There's even military bases there we don't have here. But that gun control measure, what's really remarkable is that Bill Gates and this rich guy named Nick Hanauer, that people maybe in Oregon don't know his name so well, those two guys, as they're described as elite gajillionaires here in the Times, these people actually got that one gun control measure off, and they supported it and shepherded it. I don't know if we have anybody like that in the state of Oregon. I don't think we have, you know, the really rich people we have in Oregon care about Ducks football. I don't know what that has to do with, you know, anything else. I mean, am I missing that, Bob? You know where the money's at. You know where the bodies are buried.
Well, I think it's a good question. And I think we're going to see some movement again towards campaign finance reform, because Oregon's one of the only states that has no limits. And from what I hear, Secretary of State Kate Brown, among others, are interested in moving this forward. So it would be great, because I think Kate Brown has not necessarily been as supportive of this as she's been supportive of other voting rights moves, which, in fact, she had introduced a bill last time around for automatic voter registration. And
yes.
Betsy Johnson.
When you register your car.
Right.
When you get your driver's license, that is what it was.
Basically, it's an opt-out system. So you're basically assumed to be registered anytime you're on some kind of government roll, and you have to take the step to opt out, which makes it more automatic. And mm-hmm. and yes, as we were saying, Betsy Johnson, who was reelected, was kind of the controlling
the
vote, the swing vote there.
Scappoose, right.
Who sunk that, yes.
Scappoose, that's true.
She's an heiress too, right? Isn't she? She's a really interesting, unusual, unstereotypic, super rich person. I'm just saying that. So anyway, this is KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa Loving, Joanne Hardesty, Blair Beaubier. We're just trying to put some spin on what happened, what the heck happened last night.
Yes.
To put it that way.
I think one thing that I was happy to see was that the top two primary went down in flaming defeat.
I think that was a really key victory. Very yes. key. That was going to have impacted a heck of a lot of other stuff.
Well, and I think that there was just so many hidden things that would have happened, which is
Absolutely.
Third parties would have disappeared.
Yes.
The potential for big money folks to be the one in two candidates, the only
yes.
candidates on the general election ballot. And so I was really, really thrilled to see that one go down in flaming defeat, because I didn't see anyone that benefited other than filthy rich people.
Who supported it.
Who supported it with
their filthy rich money. And
right.
And that was my great relief in the whole election.
Yeah, right. That was, I mean, I think that was my, that was probably the big positive, and the big negative, of course, is 88.
Yes.
Because the unintended consequences of having elderly people without driver's license driving on the street, having young people without driver's license and insurance driving on the street, having people having to live their lives, they're not going to not drive. They're just going to drive without insurance and without a driver's license, and then that puts us all at risk.
But there's something that's so overtly racist about it.
Oh, no question.
It bolsters the prison industrial complex. And the other piece is, this is not really off topic, but when we're talking about Measure 88, I don't think that we really hear everything that ICE does. Immigration and it's the immigration police, right? And when ICE comes and they take people from the jail or whatever and take them to that facility in Tacoma,
right.
You know, we know so much about police accountability, and we hear what our law enforcement does against African-American people
yes.
who are mentally ill. I'm sure that there are horrible things happening with people who are not, who don't speak English, maybe people
right.
who are from Honduras or
right.
Guatemala, maybe people who don't even speak Spanish. And I don't even think that we get those stories. I don't even think
mm-hmm.
we know. And so that's the part that really burns me, that it's like Oregonians were saying, no, I just don't even want to know. Don't
right.
tell me. They must have done something wrong to deserve that, and I never do. When I see votes like this, I think it's all about the voters. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Just keep those over there are the bad people, not me. So don't look at me. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but I also think that when you live in a state that lacks political leadership and political courage,
it's a vacuum.
It gives people the opportunity to show their racist side. If we had true political leadership, we would have had the governor out very strongly in support of this measure. The fact that he only won by 55% of the vote shows that people are not happy.
Less than 55%. Less than 50%. He didn't get a majority.
Oh, right. It was 49%. That's
mm-hmm.
right. I remember that. I hope that sends a strong message to the governor that people are not happy with him. You don't waste the kind of money that he's wasted, whether it was on the CRC or whether it was on a failed health care plan, and not have some accountability to voters, right? And I think the fact that Richardson did so well didn't speak to how good Richardson was. It just spoke to how disgusted people were with our current governor.
Yeah. And I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, but I look at these institutions and wonder what are you guys doing to develop your own leadership? I saw what happened with Lakeitha Elliott in the local Democratic
Party.
Multnomah County Democrats or whatever.
Right.
And I mean, I just need to know that you guys know what you're doing,
well,
or that you have a vision about this, and
so
you care, and you're going to do something.
I don't know if the listeners know what you're talking about, but Lakeitha was elected as chair of the Multnomah County Democratic Center Central Committee.
Earlier this year, was it, or last year?
It was late last year. Mm-hmm. And within a year, she had resigned that position because she said that there were some old-timers, and I'm using quotes, in the Democratic Party that just refused to work with her. And so, young African-American woman, really brilliant, really smart, really
dynamic,
really willing to work hard to build the Democratic Party. But that's been a problem in this state for quite a while, quite frankly.
What year is it now? Yeah.
We had one family dynasty that had control of the Democratic Party for well over a decade. That family dynasty has now left, the party doesn't stand for anything, right? People have a D behind their name, but the Democratic Party doesn't really stand for anything. I also am not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm a non-affiliated voter, and actually became a non-affiliated voter right after Obama's first term. I just couldn't do it anymore. When you have the majority, super majorities in both houses in the presidency, and you fail to take decisive action, it's not a party I could support anymore. And so
I think we have to say that we are the leaders that we've been looking for, and we can't look to the Democrats, and we can't look to these races. I think the most astounding thing that's been happening over the past couple of election cycles is what I call DIY direct democracy, do it yourself. And folks have put things on the ballot, and they're getting it passed. We've had measure 91, the cannabis, ending cannabis prohibition.
Well, but that could have passed last election cycle. We just had crazy people running the campaign for the last four campaign cycles,
right? It was not the type of initiative that was going to get majority support, that's for sure, the last time around.
Yeah.
But these kind of things are happening all over the country. I mean, even in Southern Oregon, they passed the GMO ban.
Yes.
And that's in a relatively conservative area. So people are doing this to ban fracking. They're doing it to limit corporate rights. They're doing it, as we heard earlier on KBOO, to boost community rights. And so people, especially in the West, where we have the initiative that we can take things directly to the ballot, we can bypass the political parties. You can do ballot initiatives at the statewide level. You can do it at the county level. You can do it at the municipality level. You can do it at the school board level. Anywhere where there is a political subunit in the state of Oregon, you can do a ballot initiative.
Do it single payer, people. This is me, howling voice in the wilderness. I'm coming out. One last thing. We're running out of show, but I mean, I think my personal, aside from the failure of our support for our brothers and sisters and neighbors and family members who are immigrants who maybe don't have all their papers, but they're right, working and they're doing things that right, matter today for us. Other than that, my other biggest disappointment is that Governor John Kitzhaber mishandled the what should have been his crowning moment of glory, the healthcare reform of this state. We got $250 million, and it all went away because of just a plain old lack of management. And here this was, the big election, and we even trounced, really, we did give Kitzhaber a great big slap in the face, but nobody's talking about the health care. They're not talking about that, right, and they're not talking about single payer. And single payer, you know, I've even heard some of our congressional people say that really is what we need. And so I just feel like part of that's the media, too. We're failing to get these messages out there or to have leadership so that we all know what is the star that we should be walking towards. And that one really gets me.
Yeah. And I think that's we are the media we've been looking for, too, because we didn't get that debate. I mean, mm-hmm. Kitzhaber had nothing positive to say about what he had done, which was a right, mistake, because he did do some good stuff, but he bungled the implementation. Richardson just said no. And I know that the Green Party candidate was talking about single payer health care. There might have been other candidates who were.
But he wasn't allowed in the debates.
Exactly. Wasn't in the debates. You didn't see it covered in the big corporate press. So it became a non-issue when it really was an important issue. And should be an issue, should be one of the issues.
Why third-party candidates should be included in these debates. I know the City Club didn't allow it, but one of the Green Party candidates, he just busted into the debate.
That was Jason Levin, yes, the gubernatorial candidate.
All right, last words, what do you think?
I think we need better candidates for office, and we need better ballot measures. And so I think we've got our work cut out for us as we head into the 2016 election season. And I just hope that we get more political courage in our elected leaders. What we need are politicians who are really clear about who they work for and what their role is in making our state better.
Which is tough because actually, so Monica Webby, I'll say this, I think that what happened with her is what happened when an everyday person runs for office. Not that a brain surgeon's an everyday person, but it's like she wasn't there. And in my mind, I'm like, well, isn't she at work? Shouldn't she be at work? I never read that she took time off. But we all need to think of ourselves as candidates and to and look around ourselves to see who should be taking these leadership roles. And that's hard.
I mean, the thing with Monica is, and let's not just steal people's stuff off the internet, right? I mean, have some ideas of your own. I think what we need is to actually groom our own leadership, right? We've had money pick our top leaders, and what we need is for the people to decide who will lead them and then work to help get those people elected.
And I think we need campaign finance reform. We need public financing. We need to have public elections publicly financed, not privately financed by corporations. And we need voting reform. We need instant runoff voting and proportional representation. Our government should look like us, and it doesn't. The government should represent all of us. There should be poor people. There should be bus drivers. There should be 51% women, right? Because that's what our society looks like. That's what our government should look like.
Mm. All right. And we're just going to leave it there. KBOO, this has been The Day After Election Recap. Lisa Loving, Joanne Hardesty, Blair Beaubier. Thanks a lot for listening, and stay tuned for news and public affairs coming up. Good morning. It's 10 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Chris Andre with hosting Air Cascadia today. Guess who's on her guest list? It's Greg Palast again. So stay tuned for that. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And then 11 o'clock, we've got The Bike Show, bringing you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. And now we're going to get, we have one. Maybe two announcements to play, and then we'll hear Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third Willamette Speaks storytelling event on Sunday, November 16th at 4 p.m. at the Lenten Community Center in Portland. The afternoon will reconnect participants with the river through community members' experiences. There will be stories from a Native American perspective, as well as from those who lived, worked, or played by the river. Again, that's the Willamette Speaks storytelling event on Sunday, November 16th at 4 p.m. at the Linton Community Center, 10614 Northwest St. Helens Road in Portland. More information may be